everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Family Tree Talk, your favourite Family Tree podcast, we hope. I'm your host, Nathan Ward, and with me, as always, is...
Helen Dabby.
Hi, Helen. You all right?
I'm very well, yes. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good, good. Do you know, we have had a lovely new podcast listener who's been in touch. Should we give them a little shout out?
Yes, tell me more.
Well, I was really pleased to hear from them, partly because they're a long-standing reader of Family Tree, but also they have really useful practical tips. They're that sort of reader who's very organised. So we always like tips to help us keep organised, don't we?
We certainly do.
So let me just find it, and I'm going to give him a read. So this is from Chris, and he says, for some reason, he's only just discovered our podcasts, and we're now joining him in his kitchen tasks. So I love that idea, because I love listening to podcasts when I'm doing things around the house or on a dog walk. And you just, when you kind of want something to occupy your brain, a podcast is just the perfect thing for it, isn't it? Anyway, he's found out some interesting nuggets of information. So he's been wading through past podcasts we've done. And he's saying he didn't realise there was no DNA testing in France. So that's way back when. I can't remember. That's many, many episodes ago we were talking about DNA.
Yeah.
His autosomal tests are just about to land. And he's really hoping he's going to make some fun discoveries, because he's done a Y DNA test and he hasn't had any matches with them, he's afraid. Even though he even set up a project to try and reach out to other people with the same surname as him. So we wish him all the best with his autosomal test results. I think he's going to have a wonderful surprise that he'll probably have more matches than he knows what to do with. And then this is his organisational tip, because we're always on about research logs and things, aren't we? So for his research log and his research diary, he uses Evernote. And he has a separate note for each on a monthly basis where he keeps a record of his activities and his searches. Each note has a table. Each row contains the relevant details. It's extremely useful as it's also fully searchable. Great, isn't it?
That's lovely, yeah. I did start something similar like that once upon a time, but I'll admit I've let it slide.
I like the way you made that distinction between a research log and a research diary, because sometimes when I see other people's logs, I have to say they look a bit too minimal and factual for me. And I'm like, where are you going to put all your thoughts about what you're doing? And so having a log and a diary, that seems a good thing to keep all the facts in one easy to find place, because I do the waffle and then I can't find my facts. So having those two things split out, that's nice.
Yeah, it's a little bit like we've named them the wrong way around almost. Well, for me, because like my Excel document is all the facts. So that is kind of a log, whereas my actual log is just random musings and nonsense, really.
That could be your journal or your diary.
Yeah, I might switch it around.
Mm.
Nice, very good. Lovely stuff. I've also heard from a listener. Mm. This is Terry from Australia. She has said, if you're looking for your mother's maiden name, this is going back to what we were talking about last week. I'm looking for my third-time great-grandparents, and I think I've got two or three generations where I've just got the father and not the mother. Anyway, she says, if you're looking for your mother's maiden name of your three times great-grandparents, she found some of hers by checking the births of the children who were born post-1837 on the GRO website. And she says it's especially good if you know the area they were married and other children they had when living in the area.
Very good tip.
I'll definitely be doing that, because I am somewhat stuck.
That's a very, very good tip. Thanks, Terry. Another reason, the benefits of searching out all those siblings. I've got a tip. Or if I was a bit more honest, I could call it a confession. What does the...
Go on, it'll be a confession. Do it.
So recently, and I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, we had this bit of a discussion about what to do when you find records on another website. And let's say, for instance, it could be the National Archives or Scotland's People, and you're thinking of adding them to your main online tree. And then we were in the kind of the quandary of at what point do you feel like you're infringing kind of your usage rights by putting records from other archives, if you're not clear. It could be any circumstance, or even if someone's given you a photo and said only use it for your own personal use, don't publish it online anywhere, but you want to put it somewhere. So, and we were trying to think of solutions of how to go about this, how to keep all your family tree stuff in one place, how to keep it organized, blah, blah, blah. And the most obvious thing, which I didn't say to you, because you very much wanted to keep with your building a tree on Ancestry at the moment, you wanted to keep with that because then you don't involve any other learning curve using any other software. you can access your research on the go. So these are all really valid reasons for wanting to keep your research on Ancestry. And we were having a dilemma, what do we do with those images, for instance, that you found on Scotland's people? So this is the solution, which I should have said in the first place, but it just slipped my mind. So save down the document, let's say, for instance, from Scotland people, save it into a folder. It could be a folder in the cloud so you can access it wherever you are.
Yep.
But then go to that person's profile on Ancestry and just add in a source citation. So it's so obvious. So you're not going to have the pretty picture of the document there in your Ancestry tree, but you're going to have the source. And having the source is good for a myriad of reasons. It's going to mean that you will know that you've definitely found the information and what the information you found is. Because you can put a record, a link, you know, put the information about the archival reference so you can track it down again. You could potentially put in a link to the record if it has a hyperlink, which is going to take you straight to that record. You can put a full transcription so you can type it all up yourself and put it in there in your source citation. It has capacity for all of that. So when you find a source on Ancestry, it will automatically kind of add it in there. Whereas when you're finding the source from elsewhere, you're going to have to manually build that source citation. But that's okay. That's fine. Ancestry gives you all the prompts to do that. One last thing why it's very important to do is because if you've got all that source citation information there, I bet that's one of the things which is going to keep your tree score high.
Oh, now you're talking to me.
Now I'm bribing you that it's a really good idea.
My ears have pricked up. So the source citations will appear then in the timeline.
Mm.
On each individual profile.
It'll appear in the middle section. So you open up the profile and then over on the left-hand side, you have like the timeline of all those key family details. Then in the middle, it'll appear in there. You'll be able to click on it. So you can add a new one in there for a new source. Let's say you found a baptism for your ancestor. Click add, scroll down the list and you find the relevant thing, which would be like baptism, relevant record type. And then that will pop a window with a billion little spaces for you to fill in information. And this is not to be slapdash, but this is an instance where something is better than nothing. So for me, and I don't fill them in perfectly, but if you've got the key information so you can track it down again, boom, that's one goal. If you've got a transcript, that's another goal, because it means even if you haven't got access to the lovely original document, you can still know exactly what was said on that document. So if you've typed it out yourself and popped it in that space. So it's achieving lots of goals with a clear conscience.
Yeah, it sounds like good practice, to be honest, as well. It's
very good practice.
It's basically taking your research log / diary and putting that online, isn't it, in a lot of ways. Making me a bit twitchy that I haven't done that. So,
But because you've been searching within Ancestry, when you've added a census or whatever, it will already, if you open up your Ancestry tree now, it will already add the things in there. So it's, when you're finding things within Ancestry, it'll do it all behind the scenes for you. It's when you're finding things from elsewhere and you want to add them onto your Ancestry tree to make sure that you have the peace of mind of where you found the information for your tree. Also, anyone else looking at your tree, they don't look at your tree and see that there are no sources. They look at your tree, looking at a profile of an ancestor, and they see there's lots of sources. Your research feels credible.
Yeah.
It's actually credible. It's got a logic to it.
Yeah, I guess a good example would be like my Edward Nelson, the guy that died in the war. Mm. Somebody else had married him off and said he'd lived a long life. Mm. I've got the documents from the king or the queen or whoever stating, sorry, he's died. So I could put that as a source until I get time to actually scan them in. Mm-hmm. People will be like, why does he think this guy's died in the war? They won't know. Because there's nothing on Ancestry saying so.
Yes.
That's good. I'll do that.
So it's a little bit more work. So that's why I really urge you not to worry if you can't fill it in perfectly. Sometimes I feel, when I'm filling it in, I feel like, wait, that box said the same as this box. You know, when it's that kind of thing, a job worth doing is worth doing imperfectly. And I'm like, this is one of those jobs that's worth doing imperfectly. It definitely will stand you a good stead.
Yeah, it sounds quite calming, actually.
Okay, that's good.
It's, I've got some news. I've just got some news. I'll come back to my news in a minute. Yeah, it sounds calming, like, from the research I'm doing at the moment, trying to get the third-time great-grandparents, which we'll probably be discussing very shortly, I'm darting around my tree quite a bit. I'm not just in one path if I'm trying to be as gather the facts as I can. And it does take a while to get back into the different strands because you don't know the names, you don't know the people, but you know them, but maybe not to the degree that you did at the time you were first researching them. So any information I've not put a source to or chronicled, it's relearning again. It slows you down, doesn't it?
It is calming.
It is.
And whenever I've said it a billion times, but and part of me feels like, oh, this is less kind of useful, less of a good use of time now that AI can so readily transcribe, you know, documents that we have. So we can upload documents and get, say, Gemini to transcribe it for us. But whenever I transcribe something with my little old eyes and my little old hand and I actually type it up, I always have, oh my goodness, why have I never noticed that moment? Because you just think about the facts differently. Maybe like an address that you just feel sure you've seen somewhere else, or somebody's middle name that you just hadn't paid attention to. And you don't know what it's going to be. It's always something.
Exactly, exactly. Anyway, back to my exciting news.
Yeah.
My tree rating's gone up.
No.
9.9.
That's ridiculous.
I never thought it would go up. I literally have just logged on now just to check my third time great-grandparents and it's gone up.
That is amazing.
It's stupid because the facts are getting more vague as I'm getting further back. So I don't really know how that's happened.
I don't know either. We're going to have to find out how these tree ratings are worked out. We shall officially find out and we shall report back in a future episode of the podcast. Yeah? I'm going to miss a mate to do that. And my tree rating's gone up as well.
Has it?
Yeah, mine's 9. Crept out of the 8s. Yeah.
No, that's really good. Well done.
Yeah. But we're going to have to find out what they mean, because also if you know what they mean, then you know what you can do to specifically, consciously work on improving the tree rating, don't you?
I know when you click on it, it does tell you things to do that can strengthen your tree rating. And it's actually sort of rainy day work. So if you don't know what you're doing, it'll give you 3 tasks to do that might strengthen your tree rating. It is a good thing to actually get your research going. Mm. But this is baffling that it's gone up when I'm adding people that aren't in as many documents.
Mm.
Still, pretty chuffed.
Pretty good.
My work here is done.
Yes. No, you've got to get to 10. Then they're going to have to introduce a new level.
It can't be possible. You can't get to 10, surely.
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
Mm.
If anybody listening has a tree score of 9.9 like Nathan, then we'd love to hear. And to be honest, we'd love to hear whatever your tree score is, because it's just fun to know the range. And I know some very good, diligent family historians who do have their tree scores are like 5 and 6.
Shocking.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? So that they obviously know their stuff, but they just haven't put the stuff into that particular tree.
Yeah, and I bet those people, though, have thousands of names on their tree anyway, so that probably does make it much harder. I've got about 230 or something like that, so
yeah. It's
not a lot, but I'm obviously taking my time with everybody. Nice one.
So how is your 3 times great-grandparent research going?
Well, I must have lied last week because I think I said I had 7 left to get. This week I've found 2 more and I've still got 7 left to get. I can't have upped one of the little arrows to make them reveal.
Yeah.
So I did find fairly easily the grandparents of George Horatio Nelson's wife, his first wife, Margaret. I found them quite straightforward. It was, I don't know why, but anyway, it was a census search and they just came about and it all tied in and it was... It was relating to the marriage. I don't have a marriage certificate for George and Margaret, but I've got the index link that's got the, like, 9B, 903, whatever the numbers are. They matched up. So I was like, right, well, they're on the same page in the same entry. It's definitely them. And then that led me to find the parents' names. So I did that, and I was very happy. And then I thought, right, I'll just work backwards. I'm literally at the far right of my tree looking at it on Ancestry. So I thought, right, I'll work back left. And then it took me to James McKay's wife, Mary Jane Rowden. I didn't have her parents. I managed to find the father again through marriage certificates. The mother is a complete mystery to me. I have no clue where to go at it. I've just really, really struggled. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to do that GRO search that was suggested. But basically, the only reason I could find Richard Rowden was... and confirm her maiden name as Rowden was because he was a minor and he appeared on 2 censuses as a minor. Mm. Not on 1 census and then on a marriage certificate. So that was my link to say, right, this wedding certificate is definitely the same people. It was that, you know, connecting the dots. Mm. All the names matched, but then I got an extra bit of information that still matched on the census. So I was happy with that and I took that in. But the mother's name seems to be very elusive and I can't remember why off the top of my head. But I've got like now, I've now got three of these where I just do not have the wives. So have you got any other tips for me then about finding these wives? Is the GRO...
So the first thing is I need to know the era and the area. So are we still, we're talking about, because you mentioned McKay and I suddenly thought, wait a minute, are we in Scotland here or are we in England and Wales still? So it's the area and the era, which you have to keep thinking about the whole time because that lets you know what records are available to you.
Right.
You know that already.
Mary Jane Rowden, who's married James McKay. So that's the Scottish link. Mm-hmm. And, but she, I think, is from surprisingly Bradford. She's from Bradford.
Okay. So you need to find her. I mean, I'm telling you the obvious things. You need to find her parents' marriage, and you need to find her baptism, don't you? So what era are you in? Like what?
She was born in 1869.
Okay, so you're well within all the lovely period of the census and the GRO record. So this is confusing where it's not obvious to find her. So you've got her dad's name off her marriage certificate. You've got her age presumably off a census.
Yes.
Yeah. So then you need to go back through the census. At some point, you're going to find the mum and dad before they get married. You've got the clue about the dad's occupation.
Yeah.
Marriage certificate.
With the Mary Jane, there was, between the marriage certificate and the censuses, there's a 5-year discrepancy in her age.
Mm.
And bizarrely, I think it was the marriage certificate that she's changed her age on.
Hmm. She might have. Did she make herself older on the marriage certificate?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so she could legally get married, probably.
Right.
She needs to be 21.
Right, because
she's fudged it a bit, probably to make herself 21, and then she's probably like afterwards on the census. She's like, on reflection, I don't want to be that old. Need a bit of beauty treatment. I'm gonna get back to either her real age or reduce it a little bit.
It's just very interesting that like my usual census search hasn't helped me because I know her maiden name and I know her father's name. I should therefore be able to find a census where she's not married to James McKay and she's living with her dad. The earliest I've got it on a census is 1901, at which point she's already married.
So this is what I think you need to do. You need to, for the time period that you do know her details, i.e. for her marriage onwards, you need to make sure you've got every single possible bit of data that you can do. Because then, as you say, there are discrepancies with her age. So you're going to build up a little mini timeline, a little list of all the data that you do have for her, because then that will give you clues. Sometimes people just change their first name a little bit. Sometimes they change their age a little bit. Sometimes they give their birthplaces within... birthplace within a kind of, they might use different words for the same birthplace depending on how specific they're being for that birthplace, but you'll get a warm idea of these are all the possibilities for her. Then you need to do the thing of looking around to find how many, what was her name again? Mary Jane Rowden.
Mary J. Rowden, yeah.
Mary J. Rowden. Then you need to look for, do the all possible contenders thing. So in the area that she's living within, look and see how many other possible Mary Jane Rowdens there are. And if you're really finding it hard to find her with her father on earlier censuses, then you need to be considering the possibility that that father's a fabricated father. Like, you don't want to jump in at the deep end and set yourself off on a mystery journey, but it's a possibility that he's a fabricated father if he's really not turning up anywhere. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because that's something to do. That's kind of a normal thing to do on a marriage certificate for the sake of decency and to look well with your future spouse and things.
Yeah. I think what's happened is I've come to this side of the research the wrong way around. I can't describe this to you now. I think I found details on the censuses of a potential Mary with a Richard. And I couldn't 100% be certain of the facts. But now, everything I've told you now, I've just gone back and done a quick census search and I found her on three. So,
okay. So you haven't got a drama. That's fine.
But that's interesting because literally, I think I saw these documents early on and I wasn't confident in them. So I didn't dismiss them, but I forgot that I'd seen them. But I've just literally found one where it says they're in Wakefield and he's a minor and... the birthplace is Staffordshire. I think that's what's thrown me as well. It's taken me out of that comfort zone. It's not a Yorkshire thing. So I was like, well, it could be anybody that, couldn't it? There could be hundreds of people, like you say, do the name search. So a mum's called Mary as well, which also doesn't help and is quite annoying.
But you're fine though, because you're basically you're finding the details you need. The search is the kind of finding the breadcrumb trails back on again.
It is. It is.
Hurrah. And that, I mean, I think it's also useful to think about when you don't find, when nothing's showing up, because you know, there's all sorts of things you can do. So you can, you've made your little data set of all the details that you do know about somebody. And then you have to start thinking, well, you know, traditionally, one possibility to think of is that their surname's being mangled. So you could try searching, using wildcards, searching on variants of the surname, using, you know, instead of just searching on exact spelling of a name, search for other options. Another option is a bit more extreme, but you could completely remove a surname and just be searching on people's first names within, hopefully for your sanity, a small geographical area with their birth dates. So you can do things like that, considering that potentially some of the people are fabricated, as like I just mentioned a few moments ago. That's another option.
That's terrifying. It's a terrifying option. I don't like it.
Yeah. And we're always really keen to go, oh my goodness, that person's got it wrong on their tree. But I had to meet a lot of humble pie, didn't I, last year when I had to lop off a branch of my tree because I'd got some people wrong. And I'd kind of reached a brick wall and I couldn't find any more on that branch. And there was just no clues, no records. There weren't even any hints for the information I had put on my tree. So, and I just treated it as a brick wall for years. And then when I revisited my research, worked back through it, and I was like, wait a minute, why on earth have I got this here? And I realized I'd made a mistake. And I lopped off that branch. And then almost immediately, hints began appearing, even though I'm such a rude, awful person about hints. Hints started appearing about who those possible ancestors could be in the gap. Once I'd lopped off the wrong branch, it gave space for hints to appear, which actually are more plausible. And that's what everyone else was thinking, and everyone else was right. And I was wrong. Then sometimes if you're not finding anything, it can be a brick wall. It can be a problem in the records, like how the finding aids have been created, like transcription errors, etc. It could be a problem in the records. It could be a problem with people's honesty. It could be a problem with your own research.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
I do think I am, her age is actually causing me a lot of problems.
Mm.
Because I'm trying to do my timeline and census thing, which, if the facts are correct, then it all works. But because she's, depending on what day it was, she's decided how old she is, it's throwing me, because I've actually just found her dad and mum living as lodgers in someone's house. In 1871, on the 1871 census. But she's not there. I currently have her estimated date of birth as 1869. But I did say I have a 5-year discrepancy. So, but obviously when I try and line those facts up, I'm like, well, she doesn't exist there. If I believe that number, then I will dismiss that.
So I think you do need to as well. So you're looking at the census, you're looking at the details you have for her birth are ones which are not at the point of her birth. So you're getting inferred dates from the census.
Yeah.
You're getting self-reported dates on a marriage certificate, which we all know it's not uncommon for people's ages to be misrepresented. Maybe they want to be younger than their spouse. Maybe there's a shortage of men after a war and they want to be a little bit younger. Maybe they want to be a little bit older so that they can legally marry. There's lots of reasons by somebody in at any stage of their life.
Well, she's put herself as the same age as her husband.
Yeah.
She says she's 26 on the marriage. Oh, yeah, she says she's 26 and he's 27. It's just cheeky.
So I think you need to get her birth certificate.
I do. I literally just written that down on a piece of paper. It will help me a lot.
It will. Yeah. It will definitely help.
It's fascinating though, like just that small detail. I know it says estimated and it's not a correct date, but if I'm just gathering facts, I'm not analysing the data, then that's what's thrown me and made me go in a bit of a circle and not trust any information, which I guess is a hindrance in some ways. I know I like to be as organised as I can be, but that's holding me back from committing to the documents.
Yeah, I think that's a it's a balance as well, isn't it? Because you're doing really well not to get distracted by rabbit holes, and you're doing really well to stick super focused. You want to find those, all your three times great grandparents. So that's great. But inevitably, like I think the other week, one of the weeks recently, I was going, but Nathan, you definitely need a map. And you're like, but I don't want to be distracted. But I'm like, but a map will help you make sure you've got the facts correct. And it's the same with this birth certificate. It's a little bit of faff. It's a tiny bit of money, tiny bit of delay while you get those details. But those, you're kind of shoring up the things that you are finding and making sure they do definitely check out. Because otherwise you might be just collecting facts, but they might not fit together super strong. Yeah. So you're giving yourself that security that the facts you're getting are good.
Yes.
And I think it's been possible to do like a fact gathering exercise needs to be a correct fact gathering exercise. So if you, like often we talk about big police detectives and things, and they're definitely going to be sticking focused to solving the crime, but they're not just going to get facts. They're going to have context for that fact and how important that fact is and what that fact tells them, aren't they? You're going to have to weigh up those facts.
Yeah, definitely. And I know I am very, I don't know what the word is, reticent to put anything on my tree unless I know it's exactly correct.
But that's why you've got that fantastic tree score, probably.
I guess so. It is funny though, because I do know that loads of the people recently, I've just skirted over the details, just got the direct facts correct. And I've not done a deep dive to learn more about them and their world, which again makes me think, oh, I need to flesh these people out. There's stories there and there's people probably missing and lots of siblings.
And that's interesting as well, isn't it? So a computer's going, yes, Nathan has all the correct facts. He has a source for these correct facts. Good boy, 9.9. And that is really good. That's not to decry it at all, because that's without that solid, well-researched tree with everything with, you know, sources and fully checked out and fully verified, like you said, then nothing means anything. It's just a bunch of names. So you're definitely building your tree. That's cool. And you've got your good tree score. But then the score isn't taking into account the kind of whimsical or emotional side of doing family history, like how you'd love to sit down with George Horatio Nelson and have dinner with him and fish him to a slap-up meal and find out about his life. You know, all of that human bit of it.
Yeah. It's also not taking into account information that I don't have. But then I guess if it knew that I didn't have that information, it would just do the tree for me, wouldn't it? Finding all these missing children as well. They're there, but...
But again, finding all those missing children for our understanding of our family history, that's like we've talked about it so much, it's so important, isn't it, to give us a sense of what it must have been like to live in that household, the sense of, you know, all the children that went through that couple, or if somebody marries a few times, through their, you know, that blended family's lives, like the children, not necessarily all of the children were living in the house at the same time, because if people were having children over several decades, the older ones would have left by the time the little ones were born. Some of them wouldn't have reached adulthood. All of that is really important for understanding what it was like to live in this household. Like, you know, was it noisy? Was it tragic? What did it feel like? But it doesn't actually help build your tree.
No.
It helps you enrich your family story and treasure your family story. But your tree is like, you're incidental.
Yeah, helps you flesh out their lives and make them real people, not just a name. I'm just actually, whilst we're talking, sneakily having a look at the GRO website to see if I can find Mary G. Rowden's birth certificate. I'm a little scant on information here. This is the thing. Again, I've got weird, what I'm going to call scant information, where her birthday is obviously potentially wrong. It's saying birth location, Bradford. But I feel like lots of stuff's coming up to say she was born in Staffordshire as well.
So this is really interesting. So we're looking at Mary Jane Rowden's profile on Ancestry, looking over on the left-hand side on the timeline, and we've got her birth, and Nathan's got four sources for her birth. And it's saying she's born about 1869 in Bradford. So out of those four sources, it'd be worth just double checking, do all four say Bradford? You mentioned Staffordshire, so which of those say Staffordshire?
It's suggesting Yorkshire, isn't it? But this is an interesting one anyway, because she's clearly in hospital on this one. Ooh. She's a patient.
When is this one? 1901.
Yeah, she's in hospital in Leeds. So, oh gosh, instant rabbit hole. Right. I'll look at a different one. Birthplace. Mary Jane, Normanton, Yorkshire. So, yes, so she's born in Yorkshire. Let's just fill in wrong. So she was widowed. Oh, my word, I'm getting caught up in rabbit holes without even trying. Right, stop it. So back to the GRO website then. So birth district, can I put Yorkshire? East Ridings of Yorkshire. Let's try that and search. No results found. So I said she'd given me like a 5-year age range, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yeah, you could do what you're doing, sticking with all those details, and then changing the date. And then you could do it, repeat it. Yeah, taking out the place and go back to your key date. And then also, if you go on free BMD, then you're not going to have to do the faffing with the 2 years plus and minus. So that could be helpful to try that website too.
I always forget about free BMD.
It's nice. The free Gen family, so free BMD. Free reg, free send. It's good. Really, really good.
Should I ditch the Jane part of it or not?
You could do, yeah. Yeah. I found it's free BMD. Okay. Born December 1872, Mary Jane Rowden, born in Wakefield. There's only one result. So what I did, went to free BMD, just searched for births. I put a really wide birth range from the beginning of 1864 to the end of 1875, because I thought, wait a minute, her age is a bit of a liability. So searching for her for a decade around 1869, 5 years before, 5 years minus, didn't put in a single place. So we're looking all across the whole of England and whole of Wales. There's only one Mary Jane Rowden, so we know there's no other contenders. So from that, we know that she's born in December 1872. So if I give you these details, you can pop them into the GRO, and then you can order her birth certificate. So her name, first name Mary Jane, two words, surname Rowden, District Wakefield, volume 9C, page 8.
Brilliant.
Yeah, lovely, lovely old free BMD.
That's cool. I've just found it too. Right, okay. 1872, Mary Jane Rowden. No matches found. What if I get rid of the Jane?
Yeah, there it is.
It's come up, but it actually says Jane, so that's curious.
Mother's maiden name Edwards.
All right, that's good. That's really cool.
It's extremely cool because now you can put in that Rowden Edwards around 20, 30 years before then. And you'll still be within, will you be? Yes, you will be. You'll still be just getting to the start of civil registration. You'll be roughly around 1840.
Yeah.
Who knows exactly when, but you'll be searching those a few decades before Mary Jane was born. Hopefully still within civil registration, and you can get their marriage.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. Like, even without spending any money, we've found a surname. So if I'm being really tight, I could not bother buying this birth certificate and just carry on with my third time search. I do think it would be useful to know her official date of birth.
Well, what I would say as well, just copy all of those details. And then you can put them, this is where, you know, we said at the beginning, if you're finding details outside Ancestry, you can add them into Ancestry yourself. So you could just copy and paste that, go back to Ancestry, go to Mary Jane's profile, go to sources, add source, add birth information, and then you'll have that exactly where you need it to be.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to be a good boy. I think this is good practice, and we're doing
really good practice. And it will just save you the headache of whether you... In the best possible world, we all order all of the certificates we need to. But on the other hand, we do all have to balance our own books and we can't spend money on everything. So this is going to achieve enough to enable you to find her parents. And then you found her parents, your three times great-grandparents, presumably, hopefully.
Yeah, they are, yes, yes.
Then you've stuck to your goal, haven't spent any extra money.
Yep. And we've done a live search during the podcast and it was successful. First time for everything.
Amazing.
Do I select this as the birth index? Yeah.
What Nathan's selecting is, he's saying it's civil registration birth index information, which is what it is. Yeah. So, yeah. And then, you know, when I said that sometimes it feels as though some of the fields are asking you for the same information, and it does feel like that. So you've put the detail, which is the GRO reference, which is great, in the detail bit. But in the transcript of the text, I'd also include that detail and include the fact that the mother's maiden name is Edwards. Include the fact that, because so far you're just including information about the record itself, saying that it's volume 9C, page 8. But it's really useful to you to know that this index detail says the mother's maiden name is Edward. It's really useful to you to know that this record says that her first name is Mary Jane, because let's say some of our ancestors might go under the names of Mary Jane or Mary J or Jane or Mary, where you want to know exactly which record is telling you which details, so that they're kind of most popular, you know, not most popular,
yes,
the kind of truth of the matter.
Well, I've had, again, I can't remember which line it was on now, because I've been trying to obviously go through different people, but another one of the wives that I've struggled with is a woman called Elizabeth, and in all the censuses, she's called Betty. And it's caused me trouble finding her maiden name, but I can't remember which one that is. I won't go into that one now. I'm just filling this in as a source. So as a source, I've selected that it's the Civil Registration of Birth. I've put my GRO references with the volume number, etc. Made a note that her mother's maiden name is Edwards, and then it's asked me to choose which facts this is relating to. So I've clicked on birth, which obviously the date is wrong, so I'm going to amend that. This then also allows me to agree that the 1871 census link to her parents is correct, where they're living as lodgers, because they don't have a child yet, because she was born the following year.
Links to her name, I'd tick that box. Links to the fact that she's female, which kind of might sound really obvious, but sometimes it can be useful. And in the web address slot, I would put that found it in FreeBMD, and normally it's really finicky, and wants you to put in the HTTPS bit. So, and sometimes it still will tell me that I've put the web address in wrong, but I think it's really useful to put in the web address, because then you'll know where you found that in the future, won't you?
Yes. I think I want to reference that I found it on both.
Yes, true.
I'm going to say...
True, because you found the Edwards
bit. Found in FreeBMD. I'll press save and see what this does.
Yeah.
A whole new world of research. So, all right. So I've got an other source link. Now, this is interesting. I've seen these, actually. The further back I've gone, I think I mentioned last week, I'm getting more facts appearing from other people's trees on the hints. And they're all sources. So this is people that I've got further back, and it's at the limits of what Ancestry can do, I'm guessing now. So people are making these notes, and that's what I'm seeing.
Well, Ancestry could easily do it, but it could be just that person hasn't found the information on Ancestry. So, you know, you've gone off to FreeBMD to find those birth details. You could have looked within the Ancestry collections, gone to the card catalogue, found specific civil registration index collections, and just searched within there. I don't like doing that. I do always go to FreeBMD and GRO. I go specifically to them, but you can, obviously you can't access the GRO index within Ancestry. But so what I'm trying to say is it's being helpfully precise about where that person's found that information. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if Ancestry does have the information, it's saying, but this person found it.
I do think I've seen Mary Jane on other people's trees. And again, the age range says about 1869. So now if anyone sees my tree and sees that it says 1872, I have linked a source. So that's useful for me, and it's useful for them, isn't it? That's good progress. I like it. And even better, I've now got another third times great grandparent.
It's very good. Yes.
Six to go.
So here, when you've got, I'm looking again back at Mary Jane Rowden's profile. For her parents, you've got Richard Rowden, and for mother, you don't have the mother yet, but you could even just add mother and put in the word Edwards into the surname thing, because then, do you know her mother's called Mary?
The mother's called Mary, because I found a Mary Rowden.
You found the mum, yeah.
Yeah.
So then the mother's maiden name's Edwards, and then that's, you may as well add it in while it's fresh in your mind and you're not having to remember something at a later date. Even though it does slow you down a little bit, whenever you find a new record, it's worth thinking what do these details relate to? So for instance, when you're finding the baby's birth certificate or a marriage certificate, when it's got those occupations, which aren't necessarily the key people on the record, not necessarily, it's not the baby's occupation, is it? But it's the dad's occupation. Go and add that as a source about the dad's occupation while you're there. And it does feel a bit laborious when you've got a focused research goal in mind, but it does build up your facts really helpfully. So in the future, you've got that data set of information about somebody.
Yes. Well, again, everything you just said there makes me feel a bit sweaty. It's like, as I've said, Richard Rowden, I know he was a coal miner, and that's how I've linked various records. But I've just clicked on his profile, and I've got all I've got on him is the birth of his daughter. Obviously, I've got the marriage certificate linking him to his daughter. It says that is a Collier on there. But is it worth me making a note of that as a separate source?
Yes.
Because that was my logic. That was how I've tied them together.
Yes, I think it's... And also, it's just partly just for the interest about what his life was like. Partly because it will help you cross-check details in the future. Partly, let's say you're looking for one of his other children and you find somebody who is a coal miner. It just helps you verify that you are, all the plaques are stacking up. So you could go to Pineland and do add, and you could add his occupation as a coal miner. Then you can add sources to that, or you could go to source. So if you haven't already added the sources, but it sounds like you probably have already added the sources.
I've got the marriage certificate on there.
So this is the guy you said was a coal miner?
Yeah. So yeah, now it links to that document. So I know that I've found that somewhere. That's great. I like that.
So just with a quick sneaky Google, then a collier, he might be a coal miner or he might be a coal merchant. And the only reason I mention it is because the groom's dad is an agent, it just said there. So just thinking back to like Victorian snobby class consciousness, then it would make more sense if the groom's dad's an agent, if the bride's dad is a coal merchant, because they'd be more on a social, economic standing to each other potentially. But, okay. But I don't know that. It could be, he could be just a coal miner. So it depends what the other records say.
One record says collier, the other one says coal miner. I've lumped them together.
Yeah, but again, that's another thing of like, ding all nighter, and then putting him in a timeline. It could be he starts out as a coal miner and he gets enough money and then moves in as he gets older in his life, partly to do with money and partly because it'd be so exhausting being a coal miner, he becomes a collier or not.
Okay, right. So I've gone in there naively thinking it was just as fancy a name for the same thing.
Well, it might be, but just because of the occupation of the groom's dad, it just makes you think, okay, it might be the same or it might be different, that's all.
Right, okay.
Not trying to distract you.
No, it's all right. I'm very easily distracted anyway, so that's fine.
But it's just interesting to think about, isn't it?
It is, yes. Now you're making me question everything.
I think that's okay, isn't it?
I guess so. I mean, it doesn't take much, does it?
Getting fanciful, let's say he is a coal merchant, then you can think, right, well, I might actually start looking in the trade directories for the local area and see if he's put an advert in, whether his premises is working as a coal merchant, whether that's listed. Whereas if he's a coal miner, you're not going to find those details in a trade directory. But whereas you can just have a little look online, maybe find a cool, lovely Victorian, beautiful advert with some swirly typography.
And now you're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a rabbit hole at all.
Not a rabbit hole at all.
No. That's great though. So I've got how many now? 6 people left to find? No.
Less than that, I think.
I can't expand my tree again. I'm not doing it. But
no.
Live research, ladies and gentlemen, working. That's what we like. Doesn't happen often. But it's happened. I actually had a marriage certificate and I found the father's occupation was gentleman. What does that mean? Does that just mean he's old and retired or?
Well, it means that he's done really well to be able to retire. And it means that he's done really well with his whatever line of work he was in, unless he was really wealthy and inherited money. Because he's managed to, sometimes you'll see it recorded as independent or IND, and it means that somebody's living on independent means they've got enough money to not to have to work.
Ugh.
Sounds
amazing.
Dream, yeah. So, but it's that we don't come across it very often at all. Yeah?
Right, okay.
I've got it, and it's one of my great grannies. She's down as IND, and her husband was a soldier, so not an officer, a soldier in the British Army in the early mid 1800s. So, that's not, it's not kind of highfalutin level of society, but from the army pension, she's managed to be living on independent means somehow.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it is. And I think she's the only one I found.
That's cool. I'll have to dig out who it is. This is the other problem I'm having. My urge to go down rabbit holes, I'm trying to suppress. But I'm seeing a lot of documents for a lot of different people very rapidly. So it's very hard for me to quantify and trace unless I slow myself down. But if I slow myself down, I'll end up following the rabbit hole. Well, it's not necessarily a rabbit hole, is it? I'll follow that trail. I know there's somebody else I've seen recently who's got war documentation as well, to join the army. And again, I don't know who it was because I was just trying not to be distracted by it. But I'm obviously very interested to see what theatre of war they were in, etc.
It's a balance between how much time you spend on the abdomen bit of your tree, because that is the bit which all of us find hard to do, because we just want to do the research bit and be on the trail of information. Whereas there are things you could do to help you. So if anyone has better ideas, then do email in to helen.t@familyhuffintree.co.uk and tell us. But things you could do, you could use those ancestry tags to say tag that you want to follow up that person. Yeah, right. Put an actively researching thing, and then you'll know that there's bits about their life that you wanted to go back and look at later. That could be a nice, easy thing to do. Or when you're saving records to Ancestry, when you find a lovely document, you could, as well as saving it to your Ancestry tree, you could save to computer. So it doesn't matter even if it's on your phone, save it to a folder somewhere that you can call the folder, like to be followed up or something. You can call it something, whatever it means to you or to be researched or whatever you want to call it. But then you've got all of these things that have had points of curiosity on them. You've got an easy way for you at a later date to go back to them. Or you can just simply revisit your research. We waffled on about that brilliant article that Chris Payton did recently about the value of revisiting research. And we talked again before about it, haven't we? Like how our brains work in different ways when they see a document. The first time they see it, different, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, talking about this now makes me feel like I'm failing at my sort of core research skills or the quality of how I use Ancestry. Because we've mentioned tabs before and they do sound really useful, but I haven't got it ingrained in my head to actually go away and use them. But in my head, as we're talking now, my thought will be, I'm going to get stuck soon. I'm going to really struggle on the fourth time's great-grandparents. I've got a few, but I think there is going to be a natural frustration that's going to happen where it's going to be harder work. And in my head, that'll be the time that maybe I'll drop back down to my second time great-grandparents and go through every single one of them individually and spend time with them and flesh them out and then eventually go up a layer and do the same again. For me, that seems more organized in my head than adding tags now, but equally.
No, that's fine. That's completely fine. It does, literally, I don't think there is a correct answer. And sometimes if the admin thing isn't going to work for you, then there's no point spending time on it. So what you've just said is a great idea. And inevitably, when you go back to your second time to great-grandparents, you'll be looking at all of those documents that you found in greater detail. And at that point, you can go and add all the occupations to the relevant people. You know, you can just look, say, right, open up a census document and go, I'm not leaving this census document until I've added the occupation as a fact on for every single person in this household, to even like the siblings and things. You've got all of their occupations, you've got all of their birthdays, so that you've built out all of the facts. Make sure you've properly scrutinized everything, because partly just the act of doing it will stir away at the back of your head and you'll see stories, which is always fun.
Yeah. I think I'm sort of in my head likening this to like training for a marathon. It's like you train for a marathon and you get to a point where you've got 20 miles in your legs and you've built up to that point. So you're there and you're in that moment. So when you've got those 20 miles in your legs, you might as well go and do the marathon. And this is that sort of thing. It's like, I've got to this point. I've found these people. I've got these facts. I should just persevere and push on with it, as opposed to, I've got to this point. I'm just going to stop. It's a tricky thing to get my head around. I'm very torn as to which way I want to go. I do think what I said about going back later on and going through everybody is probably how I prefer to work, but I'm very aware. That's like, again, the running analogy, that's like losing a few miles on your legs, saying you've not done the training as well as you used to do, so you're not going to be as far ahead, so you're going to have to go back and do a bit more training again. And that's, again, gathering the facts and working out who these people are again, because you've forgotten who they are.
I definitely don't think it's not a question of not doing something properly. Well, partly it's just interesting doing something so consciously. And none of these things are quick and easy as well.
Yeah.
They're all... So back in December 2020, on the 23rd of December, then we stopped work. And I was like, right, I'm going to redo my tree. And I opened up Family Tree Maker and I started a brand new tree. And I was like, right, with all the documents I found, I'm going to build my tree completely from scratch, because I got better at doing family history in the intervening years since I started. and I'm going to look carefully at everything I found and rebuild them. So that's good. But then I haven't finished rebuilding my tree. It's literally like a car in the garage, taken all the wheels off. And it's partially rebuilt, but it's not driving anywhere. So that's got a really good intention behind it. And I have had a lot of fun, and I will continue to have a lot of fun with it. But it is laborious. And in the meantime, I find new things. And I still have the car parts sitting on the garage floor that I haven't reattached. But I've bought a new bumper in the meantime and got someone to refurb the seats. So I mean, we're all at sixes and sevens.
Yeah. I mean, it does sound quite soothing, but it does sound very laborious as well. It's
both.
Dedication, that, isn't it?
Yes. Soothing, fascinating, and laborious.
Yeah. Should we give a shout out to what we're doing this month?
Yes, go on then.
We are doing, it's Scottish Family History Month this month, and we've got a series of webinars on tracing your Scottish ancestors.
So we've got absolute experts. We've got Chris Payton, and he's going to be hosting all three of the sessions. He's giving one of the talks himself as well. And our two other excellent speakers are Tahisha McCabe from the University of Strathclyde and Veronica Schroeder from National Records Scotland. So between them, we've got kind of top heads about Scottish family history, looking at websites, research skills, records, all of the really core stuff we need to know.
That sounds really good.
It's really good. It's always a delight to hear like any of them speak. They're really, really knowledgeable.
Yeah. If I can get back to my McKay's a little bit more and focus on what I need to learn, I might tag along to some of those.
Definitely should do.
Mm.
And also you can scoot back and listen to the recording of the group discussion as well.
That's true, because that one's free.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, thanks for listening then, everybody.
Happy researching.